And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. Now, tonight we have a special guest. It is very exciting. Actually, he came in the summer and in person, so I'm very excited to have Geshe, which is actually the surname or the beginning of, really, it's doctor in a Bon religion. And his name is Geshe Nima?
Yeah.
Dakpa Rinpoche. So I want to welcome you because is quite an honor to have you here. And you have written a book called Opening the Door to Bon. So we're going to talk a little bit about the differences between Bon and Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And we'll definitely go into your book. But usually I like to talk a little bit about what your personal journey is. And certainly your personal journey is in the book. So if you could just let us know a little bit about how you got into this. And I mean, obviously it was your life calling, but you know, what kind of brought you into this and how you got started?
You mean to in Canada?
Everywhere. Just you becoming even a Geshe, because that's even, that was pretty much not
Yes. I actually coming from India, that we have a mother monastery of the Burn tradition called a Mendri Monastery, which is the center of education for the young monks after 1959 in exile. Right. So I joined there in 1978 and then graduated in 1987. So became a Geshe. Geshe is a highest degree and a title of the study that you go through your own tradition. We got philosophical education of the Burn, that is one of the native religion of Tibet.
Right.
So that Geshe equivalent to the Western country is a doctor of philosophy of your own tradition. So that's a Geshe, and I have studied, and I belong to the family, the lineage, or the master lineage of the Burn, that called a Lati lineage. So therefore, I have a name of Lati. That is my family, the lineage masters continually that I carry on.
Which is apparently very important.
Yes, it is. For especially, I belong to my father from eastern region of Tibet. My ancestors are from that area, and so it's very well known. And also our lineage, the master, the first lineage of our family, known as Lati Jawa Yungdung, who is very well known in Pumbu and Buddhist society as well. And the continually from then on that I'm carrying from my father, and then now he is passed away. So I'm carrying the lineage, spiritual lineage particularly. So that is what I am now connected. And also we have a direct lineage of the family also in Tibet, in our mother monastery in Tibet, eastern part of Tibet.
And you also have taken upon, you're doing a lot of work with children.
Yes. After my graduation as a Geshe in 1987, and right that very beginning after, I graduated in February, I guess. February, sometime in mid of February in 87. And then that very same year, I went to Tibet, and then in 1988, so I established the organization called a Burn Children's Home, that is a BCH, in India, Dolenji, the place where our mother monastery is. Because my main reason of having that is, one reason is, as per according to His Holiness the Dalai Lama's first historical visit to our monastery in Mendri, in the same year, and have a discussion and kind of follow discussion with our His Holiness, the spiritual head of the Burn, His Holiness Mendri Tinzi, to upgrade our school from primary to middle school. So same time that also conditioned to bring our children together, the Pombos, because we are very minority in exile, under the blessing of the His Holiness the Dalai Lama, agreeing upon his oral permission, and then later on the official permissions from both Department of Education, Dharamsala, and also the Central Tibetan Administration of India in Delhi. So we make all the procedures of the legal matters to go through along. So at the same time, His Holiness Dalai Lama also have advice to get together as much as the Pombo children can in one place so that it will make easy to educate it. Anyhow, we are very minority. So instead of being separating in many different parts, so try to get and educate them in one place. That was his kind of advice. So after his departure from our monastery, so His Holiness, the 33rd spiritual head of the Mandri, Lundo Tembi Nyima, one of my root master too, has given me this responsibility to bring the children and help set, and also to follow the process of the upgradation from primary school to middle class school of our school. So that is how I have taken the responsibility with both the request of the public of Dolenji and His Holiness, my master's kind of advice and giving responsible. So I established that first with the 45 children. So also same time, that main purpose of the organization is to give an opportunity for the education, especially those the families are not really able to give them a full education opportunity for their children. And some of them are even very challenging, facing difficulties to face everyday life necessities to fulfill. So that was the part of my main intention or wish to bring, although we have a main aim is to bring Pombo children, but same time, that was the main how it is being started. So right now, from then on until now, I've been administrating this continually. So now we have almost more than 300 children, boys and girls, that last more than 22 years now. We've been organizing, kind of administrating that. So we have now many children from different part of the Nepal, Himalaya, remote areas, Bhutan, Sikkim, and a different part of India as well, our the Pombo. So this is the how we, so I make them all facilities or arrangements for living, you know, like accommodation, food, or health, education, like everything that as parents could make arrangements, each and every needs of there is try to manage and organized from the BCH.
Right. And so most of your work where you've been going around the world, you have also a center in California?
Yes. Yes. I do travel since 1990. Yes. The first time my trip to USA. And that was the beginning of my traveling to Gip. So there was a kind of multi reasons. That one is that same time that, you know, when I do have such a project, so I need kind of financial support that I cannot do my alone self. So now one of the reason is to introduce people, asking people to kind of any support or help that they could in order to make this dream come true and realize. And the same time that also that to share what we learn, what the culture and tradition we have in Bern, from the many years that according to Bern, that Bern teaching is has a history of like more than 18,000 years since the Buddha Dhamma Sangha has taught. So I really like to share what we know, something that can beneficial in the West, that you don't have very much of that access.
Right.
So it's kind of like helping to your own way of your ability, and same time you raise the funds and spreading the meaning and importance value of the teaching of Bern so that as much as people can benefit in their everyday life.
Right.
So that was my main aim also, to give teachings and travelings. Right. So I have been traveling, you know, since then every year, USA, different part of Europe, and now in Canada as well, in Russia, Poland, like, so several places that I have been and continually I am traveling, and that is how I continually give teachings.
Now, you initially were born in Tibet and then went to exile in India?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so, but the school you have, do you have one in Tibet as well as in India, or is it in India?
The school what we are talking about is in India.
Right.
In Tibet, I have my monasteries,
okay,
which is belong to my ancestors or our previous lineages. So I have a new project last year started in Nepal, the very remote area we call Mustang, Lower Mustang. Mm-hmm. That is the very remote and a very little village, Pombo village. So I have never been get any kind of help. So I was starting there also a project for the children. Mainly my emphasis is always for education and to make the children a good human being or good person, that they can be a good person to continue this existing world. So that is my main kind of vision, to make them with a full education opportunity,
right,
like every other children.
Mm-hmm. No, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And clearly that's why you need to go around the world, so that you can get money to raise for that. Now, could you tell us a little bit about the difference? And I know this is a huge question, but, you know, Buddhism is all over the world. And mm-hmm. certainly most people, when they think of Buddhism, they think of the His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and they think about, you know, that particular strain, which is really has only been around for 3,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's yours, which mm-hmm. is a form of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
That has been, as you say, 18,000. And there's also, I have a friend who's Japanese and she's Buddhist.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of different areas. I mean, traditionally I had heard Buddhism wasn't a religion, but you call Bon, and I'm saying it incorrectly,
Bon,
a religion.
Yes. Bon is a native religion of Tibet.
Right.
You see, everybody know that it is not originally originated from India. So-called Buddhists, then, especially when we say Tibetan Buddhists, we're talking about the Tibetan Buddhists now. The Tibetan Buddhists actually originated from India, and in Tibet particularly, it is kind of mainly flourished from the very beginning of 8th century. In other words, maybe we can say very end of the 7th century, but mainly flourished from the 8th century. So the difference is, you know, often people ask, they're just wondering what is the differences. Historically, there is a very differences. You know, the sources are different. The founder is different.
Mm-hmm.
Like Buddhists, the Tibetan Buddhists, what we have now is originated from India. Mainly it's originated after founding by Buddha Shakyamuni, who was a prince, right, from India.
Right.
And likewise, the place is different, country is different, culture is different, where it comes from, where language is different, where it is being brought to Tibet. The Bon religion, it is long before that, it is existing in Tibet. During the 32 generation of the royal family, or the kings of Tibet, and whole nation of Tibet, it is a believer and a practitioner of the Bon. There was no any other religion than the Bon. So during whole those, from the very first Tibetan king, Nyati Tsembo, then all the way till the 32nd Tibetan king, that whole Tibet is a Pumbo and a believer of Bon. So ancestor of the Tibetan people now is actually a believer. Each and every Tibetan's blood has a Pumbo blood, according to Bon history. Everything is quite much changed since the Buddhists come in Tibet. History began to have changed, the different histories. And then the many aspects of the literatures and history of those things are becoming now having kind of like two branches.
Right.
Everybody, you know, emphasized the mind one is reasonable and practical. So whatever. So the truth is, according to Bon, the Buddhists actually come very after, we can say that, the Bon was already established, therefore it is known as a native religion of Tibet.
Okay.
And then Buddhists later come in from the 8th century, and then from 8th century to very much up to 11th or 12th, that Pumbo has a very hardship life.
Mm.
Pumbo has been totally persecuted and have gone. This is not I am saying, it's the history books are still remaining there. Every chapter is open there. So that's the part of our history before. Now differences, as I say, founder as a Buddha are different. Shakyamuni is the founder of Buddhist religion, the Buddhist tradition. The Buddha Thompa Shenrab, who is the founder of Bon religion, who taught this teaching not in India or not in Tibet very beginning. He taught this in his birthplace known as Olmo Lungring. Gradually after his enlightenment, he's passing away from this physical body. So one of his great successors, known as Mucho Demdu, among many thousands of students, there are six great successors from the six different countries, are known as six great ornaments of the world, according to Bon. These six masters spread these teachings in six different countries, including China, and Shangchung and Persia, nowadays we call it Iran, the old Iran capital, you know. So this many places like Shangchung, Kugye, so six different masters have been driven in their language, translated in their language, taught, including Nepal, including India. Gradually, the teaching has been spread in those countries. And then, of course, from Shangchung, then it is brought to Tibet. So in Tibet, what we have been teaching now, originally it is transmitted and translated from Shangchung language into Tibetan language by four great scholars, known as, leaded by the Shangchung Tongjung Tuchen. One great scholar known as Shangchung Tongjung Tuchen from originally Shangchung. And then also he is known as a great enlightened and saint in Bern. So the four these great masters have translated from Shangchung language to Tibetan language and also taught the many Tibetan. So then teaching is being more accessible in Tibetan language and then flourish in Tibet. So now where is Shangchung? Shangchung is an independent country and a very huge country which has a rich history, culture, costume, language. And nowadays it is divided in many parts. Some part of the Shangchung geographically part in early part day of the history. Now part of being in the northern part of India, you go to Ladakh, Zanskar, Lahul Spiti, Kinori, this whole area, you will see very unique culture, costume, language. Then any state, any part of the Indian territory, what is now so-called India, you will see totally different. Then many part in Nepal, like I told you, I have now project in Mustang. Those area in the most northwest part of Nepal and close border to Tibet, all early day is Shangchung, and still there is a very many evidential objects, caves, text, historical places are by name still identical of the Shangchung culture and language. And then nowadays, but physically so-called now Shangchung. In Tibet now we have northwestern part of all Tibet region is Shangchung Tibet, Shangchung before. Until the last kingdom or king of the Shangchung is being assassinated by Tibetan king. And that is the time that Shangchung actually emerged into Tibetan culture, Tibetan his kind of stimulus in Tibet. So gradually its kingdomship is disappearing, culture is disappearing, language and so on and so forth. But still not totally died, still visibly you can see this.
Right.
These are now there. So now the differences in the teaching. It is very difficult to say as to show you visibly say this is piece of that, say different. It is not something like that. Teaching is something you could only understand the differences when you go into and practice and study. Then you will say, oh, this is the truly differences. Oh, this is the different, right? It's not like something you look to different color and this is yellow, this is green. It's not that much easy as. True differences is you will know when you study and when you get into do a true research, you can say. But in a very general level, fundamental, there isn't any differences, I would say, because fundamental of the teaching, not only between Buddhists and Burma, even any other religious, I would say, Hinduism, Sikh, Judaism, Christian, Zen, everything, everyone is based on non-violence, compassion, love, and so on and so forth. This is a fundamental of, actually, sometimes I think is not even this is not a religion. It's a basic quality of every human being and every sentient being we have. The loving, the kind of these things. But anyhow, these things are based on both Buddhist and Bumbo. Now, if you go more deeper in advance, so for example, in tantric level, the images of the different deities, male and female deities are very different. Names are different. Lineage are different. That one teaching is transmitting from one master, so and so, how it is being transmitted. Its sources are totally different. And some advanced part of the technique and practice are quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most by word and by name we can say different is in a Buddhist in general, so-called Dzogchen, which is for us, is the ninth and the highest level of teaching in a Burn. Burn is known as we have a nine stage of the teaching of the Burn, nine level or nine stages. The ninth is the so-called Dzogchen. Dzogchen is the great perfection, we call in translation in English, means that the highest level of teaching, that particular teaching, is not common to all Buddhists. In the Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist, they have four kind of subdivisions. And the oldest of the Buddhists, known as Nyingma. Nyingma tradition only have a so-called well-known teaching as Dzogchen and same name as Wipombo have. They say also Dzogchen, we have same name as Dzogchen. So these two have a similar names, but the rest of the three Buddhists, they don't have a word of Dzogchen teaching. Nowadays, they say this is similar to that great Mahamudra and so on and so forth. Like, but so-called Dzogchen as a title is known only in the Burn and Nyingma, one of the best. So these things, I think, there's quite evidently differences. Why not all except one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although historically a lot of things going on, that's not an issue, I guess. So these protectors are different. Histories are different. Places are different. Customs are different. Like Pombo, we have officially when we wear monk's cloth, we wear one main thing is a blue one. Mm-hmm. So blue cloth, that Tonga upper cloth shirt, is only wear by Pombo monks, nor any other Buddhist wear the Pombo. If you see visibly any monk is wearing like a rest of the same as Buddhist, but upper shirt has blue, you can consider that's a Pombo. We have a very unique symbol that playing a kind of playing symbol, a religious symbol, flat, we call silnye, is totally different than Buddhist bajra and a bell.
Mm.
And swastika, the symbol of our teaching is a swastika. I know in the West people have a very allergic swastika, you know.
Well, only because it was manipulated and changed a bit. Yes.
I know it's unfortunate, but yes. It's not a practical, I still believe. Because swastika doesn't did anything wrong. It was labeled there. If you are hate or you have a very uncomfortable with the swastika, then you should have uncomfortable with aeroplane too. Because aeroplane is the one who carry things and drop things and damage things, right? But in us, if you truly understand, it is not they use the first time. Swastika is totally has a very esoteric level of meaning there. For us, it's a life and a death. Circle of the life and the death. And the mean we call it yung dung. Yung ni chewa mebe yung. So the full name of our burn is eternal burn, we call. Eternal burn means everlasting, non-destructive, unchanging nature of its true potence of beneficial and service to society, to human beings, to the sentient beings. By applying its essence, and you benefited, others benefited, through which we can come over from our stress, depressions, our inner imbalance, situation of our inner energy. So we are happy, unhappy, sorrow, and this and that. This is all how you respond to the things that you are connected. Not the things make difference. Your way of respond makes the difference. So this is the meaning that swastika, what we have. One way, it's a long time, very long before it is a very ancient symbol, which has a very everlasting, undestructible meaning. And we used to live in that essence of the meaning. But gradually, people are being distracted, more and more are far being understanding the essence of the meaning. So people, now we are where we are now. Everybody even kind of have, there's a swastika as a symbol, huh? Oh, this is swastika. Every time they use and go back to before 1947.
Yeah.
So this is kind of, so what happened nowadays in the whole world is happening. So what would you still those symbols you are going to hate? Why is only swastika? You're not understanding the essence of swastika. For us, this is the bamboo's main symbol, which has a full essence of wisdom, if you look carefully and study, and there's more meaning. So these are swastikas that bamboo is anticlockwise, and we have meanings. Anyhow, so these are the kind of visible differences, and also we have a special spiritual crown or hat. You know, when we perform special teachings, empowerment, and so we have a bamboo we call peju, it's a lotus hat, have a very special white hat, special design of the white color, based on the white color, then designed different according to ritual and tantric and so on. So those are, if you are looking for differences, so visible materially, these are the kind of differences. The true differences, if you want to know, then the people have to study a little bit. Then only they will know real. Even somebody are very well explained, but still they will not able to understand the exact differences. Mm-hmm. It's like you will understand the true taste of the sweet when you experience by tasting your own self, not only by listening. If somebody say chocolate taste is sweet like this, like that, so you will have only close by like and like. If you had the chocolate, yes, I had, I understand. Immediately somebody explain you, you can go back to that real experience, because then you don't depend on the like that. You can say that is the what I have experienced. So it's very much like that.
Right. It's funny. I've interviewed several people who, you know, have done a lot of research in the different religions, and because we're all trying to find that weave that brings them all together, where we mm-hmm. connect with them. But, you know, a lot of them say that most of the religions do not actually teach you how to become enlightened. And from reading your book mm-hmm. and from understanding your practices, that is one of the main purposes. And that certainly is what the ninth level is to take you to. But it seems that yours is one of the religions that actually does teach how to become enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a difference, I think. Again, mm-hmm. because my girlfriend, who's from Japan, she says the Buddhist religion that she's from, she goes, "Oh yeah, we're not the ones that think we're going to be enlightened in this life." So there's different areas of Buddhism mm-hmm. as well, but certainly yours seems to be. And let's talk about your book, because I think, you know, clearly your book has been written, and it's written in a way that Westerners can understand. And we might want to talk about Tantra, because certainly Tantra has a completely different meaning here.
Yes, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, let's talk about... So there's the 18,000 years that has to have a very rich tradition that obviously has changed, but to have that passed down. And you also have a very mystical beginning the three brothers that were coming down to teach. Can you talk about that? Because that's kind of an interesting...
I think that's a kind of a history of the very previous life history of the... Because we believe on rebirths. We believe on the karmas. Karma simply means that you believe on the cause and the result.
Yeah.
And likewise, also the history part of the Buddha Shenab, that who is the founder and also our teacher in Bern. So his previous life, that how these three brothers are appearing and manifesting after they have achieved enlightenment themselves. So in a Bern view, the enlightenment is not only self to free and relax. The purpose of our practice in this very life and going through many challenges and devotions and time and effort, it is not necessarily to make yourself comfort and free from whatever you are running away from. But we are always try to focus based on your own situation. So we put this situation to all the rest, that's as we all are, as one family, one brother and sister like. So when I am not comfortable in going through such pain, and I have no reason to think that my friend's pain is deserved, and my friend's pain is okay to have a pain, I am not supposed. And we don't look that. So when I am not enjoying it, I'm not willing to go through such a pain, and I also have a equal and supposed have an equal motive of relieving the pain of yours as well as others, because everyone is in the same circumstances of the situation, that no one is willing to go themselves in suffering. So our main practice is to relieve us through suffering and cut off the causes of the suffering. Then it's like you can cut off the root of the poisons. You see, if you have a tree that is a poisoned, the poison tree, and every time that when it's time to grow the branches, and you don't like that smell, you don't like that energy, you don't like that tree poison growing, so you keep cutting the root, branches off. You can cut branches and it temporarily you will be free from the its visibilities of the form of the branches are growing there. But same thing will grow next, same time of the year now, again the branches will come. So that will not help you to relieve totally from the free of the poison tree. If you truly want to free from the poison tree that you don't like it, only to dig out from the root and cut the root and totally relieve. So suffering of all sentient beings is important to dig out the root of the suffering and remove the suffering root, so we know any more going to face the any of the result, so because there is no cause. So the practice of our teaching is to dig out your root of the suffering of that we each and every one. So when they practice in that way and go through all the process and practice, and you reach to the state that where you don't need any more to practice, rather you are in the state of the result of the practice. So now result of your practice was based on your motive, that if I attain enlightenment, that my wish, my will, my purpose of enlightenment is to liberate all sentient beings from the suffering. So therefore, when these three brothers of the past life connected of the Buddha Sherabs, when they have enlightened, so now is time for them to manifest, to make their motive of the beginning practice. They achieved. Now to manifest and bring the result of their motivation of cause that make them to practice and reach in that state. So they manifest. So if they appear only in the form that enlightened, something extraordinary beyond the capacity of understanding physically, mentally, then, like many tradition have, the God, goddesses, angels that we talk about, but nobody have idea of where they are, how they are, looks like. If somebody painted always, they paint a beautiful one. Who knows whether they are really beautiful looks there or not? That's how our imaginary belief, yeah. There should be beautiful one. There should be the best of looking, best look one, right? So in order to make ourselves communicated, so these enlightened beings are manifesting as like ourselves, human being. So there can be more physical looks, understandable language, physical and mental capacity. Although they are in real level of wisdom, compassion, knowledge, is totally far beyond reachable of ordinary looking, but still they come as a human being, as a child, and so forth, so forth. Like, so that is the what their main purpose, what we are talking about, is their previews. It's not something Buddhas are just coming from sky and manifest. It's not like that. Buddhas also have been studied like us, we human beings. So it's an example to us. Buddha is not something extraordinary that you cannot reach. Only extraordinary can reach. Then maybe we don't have reason to practice the ordinary people, because this is not the something ordinary people can achieve, the result as extraordinary that Buddhas are. So teaching will have not that much connection to us human beings or sentient beings. But Buddha Thompa Shenrab's teaching is not like that. His teaching is he became as a prince, he became as a man, and he taught everything as like in our language, that communicable. And he did himself gone through, and then it's giving example that, look, this is what I'm teaching, this is how I am practicing, this is what I am achieving from my practice. So if you do like I am saying, like I am doing, you will achieve like I have achieved. So it is ordinary people can become an extraordinary person. Uneducated became very well wise person with education. So it's a matter of effort. So Buddha has given a model for all us too. So they became as like that, as a person.
Right. And you had, in the book it says that the one was born 18,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and that the second one was to be coming around this future. Time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is in the future.
Among the three, the first one is the past one.
Right.
The present one is the one of the brother.
Okay.
So then the next one will be the future Buddha. When this period of the Buddha's teaching and the period is over, so our human being life length will be not long as now. It will be only 10 years life.
Uh-huh.
Now, according to the text, we generally we say this is a 100 years life long. Although some people live more than 100, but mostly we even don't live beyond 80 and 90s. But the length, it is kind of categorized in that level. So Buddha, present Buddha, Tenpa Shenrab, is the Buddha of the 100-year period. Okay. When this period is over, then the next length of the life of the people will become very much reduced. So their life will be only 10 years. So in 10 years, they leave everything. That's mm-hmm. like we live in 100 years. So that time we will have another level of Buddha that will appear as a Buddha of that period.
I see. Okay. Interesting. Wow. So we talked a little bit about the nine different levels. I like the fact that, you know, our mind, and I mean, many places talk about this, but that how our mind is, you know, the poisons that we have to overcome. I mean, mm-hmm. it's really... We don't seem to have control over it. We want to have control over it. But if we, you know, if we focus on trying to have control over it, our mind is just going to go crazy, because we need to find that balance between our heart and our body and our mind. Yet we seem to give our mind the driver's seat. It seems to be the thing that controls us mostly,
mm-hmm.
and,
yes.
and our responses and our reactions. And you talk about seeing the world as a mirror. And I know a lot of people talk about that mirror, but I think... The way you talk about it in your book, it's a more complete vision of what the mirror is. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I think, you know, we as a human being have a very tendency of looking everything very much external. If there is a problem in 10 people mm-hmm. of group, one person may be the responsibility, but 9 person among the 10 will not know about who is responsible, but except the person who caused the problem. Each of 9 person thinks he maybe have done this problem, or that person may be the responsible, this may be the responsible. And none of us is thinking, I may have done mistake too. Maybe I am the responsible, possibly, maybe I didn't know, but I could. But we don't think that. We always want it. We are very expert to think somebody could have done. And we talk about that. Mm-hmm. We make the connection of that according to your capacity of judgment and understanding, based on your own illusion of whatever. Huh? And accordingly, we take responsibility in action. Accordingly, we are living in this, our life. So therefore, we are actually not getting totally away, free from our actually not only external problems, but inner problems. Therefore, I was mentioning in the text, I say, the Buddha teaching, you should look as an inner mirror, that where you could see your true self. The external mirror, if you want to see, It reflects your looks. It doesn't reflect yourself. You stand up in front of the mirror. It will simply reflect your copy in the mirror, but you are not the one that is reflected in the mirror. It's your copy. But we are satisfying, and we are we are looking that as yourself. Oh, I am there. We even don't ask questions. Is that truly am I or not? Immediately you see your copy in the mirror, you think you are there. You have seen your. We look our, maybe my mother's picture, and you say, oh, I saw my mother. She looks good. She looks healthy. It's the same way we do on things like that. And we are living in that kind of way of perception of communication, communicating to the real life, so-called we say real life. But truly, we are always being not correctly understood ourselves. Whole period, you think you are the one in the mirror, seen in the mirror, and that is absolutely not true. So therefore, we look after that projection and you think, I am that, I'm this and that, and so. And that is an example of yourself, a copy. Same thing of your everyday life. We are surface and you think that's my life. That's their life. That's our life. Huh? In real, first of all, our old problem is not solving in any way. Day by day, we make all effort to solve the problem. It increases the problem. It doesn't solve the problem. Why is that? Because we don't see the true problem's source. We don't see true problem maker, who truly is responsible to create this problem. To see that problem maker, and to see that true person who is making, so then you should not look always outside. Say, look inside. Check yourself. Try to understand yourself, who you are truly, and how you are looks like truly, where you are truly existing. And then there will be a question. Instead of running always outside to find the guilty person, you will think to look first inside. Make sure the true guilty person is hiding inside of you, and you are running always to finding out outside. So the inside, the guilty person relax there, and because he sees you're running always outside and is near even by you. So mirror, the inner mirror is we call a self-realization, true understanding of self, who truly is. Because of lack of true understanding of self, we have all these problems. So we run after the illusion of self-recognition, not the self, truly self-realization. We think we are, which is we are not. We do things on the basis of that we are ourselves as we are doing, in a real, that is not somebody else. So our ego, pride, attachment, anger, hatred, jealousy, this is all lack of realization of your true self. Lack of true realization of the true sources of the old illusion and sources of the delusion that is coming. So therefore I say, don't point your finger always to out. Try to learn your finger to point in yourself. First, check yourself, point yourself before you pointing to others. That is what I meant of inner mirror.
Well, I think it's really important these days because it's not just where the problems are. I mean, it's every friend that you have, every person you meet on the street, whenever you have a judgment or whenever you're, you know, thinking about something, whether it's anger or jealousy or all of this. I mean, it seems to be that we're so convinced that it's outside of us, that well, they're the problem, they're the reason this is happening. And it really is our fears and our unresolved, attachments, I think, are huge because I think we are so attached with this body and the mirror, the image that we see and the apartments that we have and what's in them. And it's really difficult to, especially in the Western world, to sort of understand how to make that connection, like how to, every time something happens, that you go inside and say, okay, well, I'm making a judgment here. This is my judgment. This is not something outside of me. This is my fear.
Yeah.
Or my...
You see, I think it's, yes, it may be very beginning, it may be a little bit uneasy because you are not used to with that culture or tradition, and that your mental is totally set up in a different way than our mental, we can say like that, okay, mm-hmm. in general. Example like, but once you are being understood, and once you are being understood, then it won't make that difficult to go in or to look inside rather than always external or outside to project. It is very much like yourself learning a driving. Somebody people say, oh, I cannot drive at all, I have this problem, that problem, you know, and I have kind of fear. So you have a very good reason to not to drive. Huh? Mm-hmm. And then you don't drive at all. And some people, even in the same situation and circumstances, that your determination and your things where you perceived is very different. Well, why not? We can try, you know. Why not? Other people can drive. Why not me? I can drive too. It's a matter of practice. It's a matter of learning, effort of practice and training. Why not? When you have that strong will of perception, different level than the person who have in the earlier, and when you learn it, at the very beginning, almost you hit, or maybe you will hit somewhere else, here and there. Even you get a final approval from the concerned authorities and giving you a license. Very first day of the yourself clearing you're okay to drive and have the driving license, within 2 weeks or even a month, still you are not sure whether you can or not. But what you have some good stability, confidence is that now I am able to drive because I got a clearance that I'm okay. So that has a very good base of yourself to accept I am capable to drive. And same time you have a tendency, I'm not sure. But you drive with a mixture of that two reactions, but you are mindfully present in that driving. Time pass on, and while you are driving, here and there, that imbalance side to side, but gradually you drive. And once you are totally kind of in used to, and your fear automatically goes away, your perception of yourself that I'm not sure is gone, and you're easy, you're confirmed, then you even don't need to think, I may or I may not drive. You just drive, you just start it, and you do everything very much naturally, you know, changing the gates or doing this and that, very much. Then you can speak on phone, you can talk in the car, people that. So how? This is all matter of training and determination.
Right.
Likewise, if you are determined, thing is in the West, often I found that people are not ready and they don't want it. That is the thing. It's not that Westerners are not qualified to understand. Because the Buddha Dhamma Shenrab's teaching is never focused and limited only for Tibetan or the Bumbos. It is meant to be benefit for all sentient beings. But truly, those sentient beings for all, but still who are ready, who are open, who are determined to do practice, then this is beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a very clear, rich in mineral, the waterfall, it's good to be drink. It is very rich in mineral. But that is not mean that everybody can benefit it just having that water there fall. Only will be able to benefit it who go and get the water and drink it. So even you have such a teaching, it's not going to help unless you are determined and you value it, you open yourself to. Open is very important. So if you do that, anybody, very beginning in Shangshung it is taught, and then gradually it is reached in six different countries, as I mentioned earlier, then gradually in Tibet, this is not an original place where the Bon teaching is being born. very beginning, when it's born in the new country, it's a foreign for them. When people are open it gradually, everything is now there, part of there. So likewise, it's slowly, slowly now in the Western world, there's a lot of Pumbo believer, Pumbo practitioners. So that means it still didn't say, okay, these Westerners are qualified and the rest Westerners. We don't say nor Buddha have said that. It's for all sentient beings. It's a very proof that this teaching is for all, because whoever is open and themselves to let teaching be benefit, and teaching have an equal potential to benefit. It's like a drinking milk. You drink milk, you will benefit. If I drink, I will benefit. If she drinks, she will benefit. But the milk itself is not going to benefit if we three of us don't drink it. Milk is there for three of us who are ready to drink. Milk never say, I'm only for this or I'm only for that. That is the what it is. So if the Westerners are determined, and many Westerners have already have great, tremendous, beneficial achievement, realization, devotion, and practice, because they value it, they realize it, they experience it.
And that's the key, is that, you know, you have to experience it, you have to actually practice it. And you talk about having trust and faith, and certainly in a teacher, and within just having trust and faith in knowing that it will work.
Yes. You see, when you are going to some new places and you don't know very well about the place, geographically, historically, you know, environment, so on and so forth, and you are depending on somebody else that who could guide you. If you are fully opened, it may be possible that you have a good or bad guidance, bad guide too. But with that fear, you cannot doubt to everyone, you cannot close the door of the benefit and chances of having all those good guides too, right? So it means you have to trust and allow to guide to lead. If you're fully confident and trusted, while you are leaded by the guide, and when you're following, you will have a sense of connectivity, you will have sense of feeling that's correct, that's kind of making sense, etc. So then it is beginning to into you. But Tomba Shenrab also, he didn't say you have to totally blank faith, just only believe that what I say because I say so. He didn't say that. In one of his teaching, the Mother Tantra, has very clearly, he says, teaching should not, the eternal burn is not meant to be only devotion, for devotion, because only it is I say it or I teach. I want you to analyze yourself like a good goldsmith analyzing the gold, whether it's pure or not. They analyze the gold, pieces of gold, whether this is pure or not. They rub it outside, they burn in the fire, they cut so they can see inside. So with three tech method of that, how the goldsmith conforms this piece of gold, so-called piece of gold, this is a genuine and pure gold with no mixture. Once you go through this analytical research, then even nobody can, even Buddha says this is not a pure gold, you will have no reason to follow that, because you know yourself with the full realization by analytical as well as by experience. So teaching is not only for devotion and worship, that's it. Teaching is for men to train and practice. So I always tell to my friends and students, I say, you don't necessarily have to just close your eye and believe. I say, I want you to practice what the Buddha Tomba Shenrab has taught us. And through those teachings that generation after generation, our previous masters have been passed to, and then until now, up unto myself, that I am transmitted these teachings from my great and kindness root masters. And we have gone through such as I'm telling you, I say, if we say this practice is meant to for benefit, and will this and that benefit, you just don't believe only, and relax. Then say, test yourself whether this is beneficial everyday life or not. That means what master teach, you have to listen carefully and with the very mindfully. Then you have to remember what the master have says. And then you have to reflect on what you have kept, what you have heard from the master. So your understanding on that is what you have been reflecting on it, what you have heard from the master. That your reflection on the teaching that what master has given, and then you apply that reflection in your practice. What is outcome of your result? So your reflection, result of your practice, the word of the masters, if these three get together, you have no reason to say no. That's the solid reason of reasonable reason, analytical reason you have, that you have not just believe on by faith because master says so or Buddha says so, rather you say, I have experimented. That is the, if the Westerners could practice in that way, everybody, not only the Westerners, everybody have a great potential to benefit, because we all have the full capacity to achieve Buddhahood potentially. Equally to every sentient being, we everybody have a Buddha nature in us. It's like a butter already in existing in the milk as a potential. Whether it is milk in Montreal or Quebec or in Nepal or Tibet, milk has always a butter potentially together within. The water doesn't have the potentially of butter. So if you churn the milk, definitely you will get the butter. If you churn the water, you will get nothing of butter. Because one have the potential, one have the not. We have the Buddha nature in potentially in us. We just need to exercise by applying the instruction and guide that master have guided you. So you apply that in you and you make you different yourself. It's not something you say, you believe in so. It is something you can experience. If I say, if you could meditate, it will give you peaceful insight. It will give you a clarity. It will give you this and that. And if you do truly meditation, and if you find that is exactly it is happening, then why? Why that you don't take advantage and use to make yourself happy and peaceful? If that doesn't really help at all with your own full confidence of knowing this doesn't work, and maybe that is not suitable, maybe that is not good enough for yourself, or maybe you are not ready for that practice, then there's no reason to hang on, no matter what.
Yeah.
If this milk is not digesting, you cannot keep drinking it because it's a milk which has a good protein. You cannot say that, right?
Right.
Maybe that is not good. So you need a 0.23 and what, so many different level of milk you have now. So that's how it is according to your digestion and need, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like that, I think.
Hmm. Wow. Well, we've talked about a lot of different things. Is there anything that you would like to, obviously we'd want to get people so that they know where to contact you, mm-hmm. but is there anything that you would like to say about your book or your teachings that you would like people to know specifically?
Yeah, well, my book actually is published and in New York, it has a Snowland publication. My mean of the publishing book is based on my experience of traveling, giving teachings in the different countries during almost like 19, 20 years when I wrote these books. Because I met so many fellows, so-called themselves as a practitioner. Many say, I have met that master, this master for 19 years, 15 years, 20 years I have been practicing. And then when we became to conversation and I'm kind of checking with them, in our conversation, in many I found they are groundless practitioner. They really don't have good ground or practice. They have a wave of interest or practice. and there are some of them are hanging on the branch up in the space. They're not grounded. Means there's, I'm a Dzogchen practitioner. I'm a tantric practitioner. I received that empowerment, this initiation of tantra. And so I say, oh, okay. I said, no. It's good you have many empowerment. Good you have interest of holding in this whole years, 25. But basic important is foundation. You need to grow. You need to build your foundation. If you have a very high and precious jewelry or object you have, you just can't keep that in your house everywhere or anywhere. You must keep this at the safe place, right place, so that it doesn't get lost or damaged or destroyed. You need to value it. You need to know this is how important. When you don't have that safe place, what you have, something precious, is not guaranteed it is safe with you. Likewise, you say you have such a valuable teachings you receive from the such a well-known masters. That is not the point. Point is, how much do you benefiting from this practice? How much truly you are utilizing the preciousness of this teaching? That very much depends on how much groundly understanding of the teaching essence. So therefore, I found many people have no good ground. So I really thought it's a waste of time, in another way, if I say. So with that focus, I have wrote this as a for the very beginning, not only for the Bumbo. Yes, I have based on Burn or preliminary or foundation practice. But if this, you don't have to become Bumbo by practicing this. This will develop your inner wisdom or inner self-growth of understanding the true potential of teaching is. What you have to prepare yourself to become yourself a good practitioner. How you listen, how you motivate it, how you actively engage practice in your everyday life. Not in the fantasy realm, but in a practical life, everyday life. We have problem in everyday life. And beside, we have problem in next life, I would say. But first thing, if you are having bad pain, you just can't say, I'm looking something for medicine good for my next life. First, you take care of your pain that is very right now. Yeah. I say, therefore, each part of the practice here is not just I have commented it. I have explained each and everything detailedly. And then every session and part of practice, I lead in meditation. I say, begin with this, go second in action or meditation, conclude with this, and then you dedicate. So each practice I have lead in meditation also. And this will certainly people will have, if the people have difficulty understanding the value of spirituality and so on, so I'm sure this will help them to bring them closer to inside of them and bring them to understand what is truly necessary to ourselves to prepare to save our time. And this is what I have. So I still wanted to say people that you have to make sure you understand the importance of foundation of your practice. Then only you can build up further advanced teachings. No matter 100 times of you receive the secret and esoteric teachings, if you have no foundation, where you are going to keep that old practices? So build your inner understanding, spirituality. You prove that in your everyday life. Right. By practicing, if you reduce your anger, you prove that your practice is inside. More you are practicing, time pass, and more you are anger energetic, you cannot control anger or the hatred, the jealous. If nothing is changing, so-called your practice is not a practice, never helped inside. So your inner mirror is under the dust of ignorance. So you need to clean that dust and see the real mirror of inside. I think that's important for everyone. What you believe is not the important. The spirituality is important part of our everyday life, the human quality. That's the spirituality. You don't have spirituality in your life, very much you have lacking a one main important potential in our everyday life.
Yeah. Well, I will end it with this, but I know that we have talked with other interviews. And I mean, we have to treat our spirituality as equally as we, you know, we give our brain and our bodies, and we're not doing that. We're not creating the sacredness. We are, we're just, you know, believing it will happen, or we're, you know, under this illusion that we don't need it, or, you know, our cup is full, which is another problem. But yeah, I mean, we have to put as much determination and willpower into our spirit and our spirituality as everything else. Well, this has been a great honor.
Thank you.
We will put it up on the website, but we'll have your website, Deb, on there. And is there another website to get a hold of you with?
Yes, there are the several, I think, websites. You can put, I'll give you here some, which is connected.
We can put them all on the webpage if you would, rather than tell them all out. But
yeah.
Oh, okay, you've got.
So there's a web page you can put, and there are several webs. Okay. This is all connected.
Beautiful. So this and will all be on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can put that in Munjal, our websites here too. So that. Yeah.
What is it?
Zamangil.com.
Zamangil.
It'll be on the page with this interview once it's up.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good.